The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Zion Primitive Baptist Church podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church, which is located in the Zion community near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Elder Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation of believers in the sovereign grace of God, where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. If you live in this area or are visiting here, we would love to have you attend worship services with us. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesday evenings at 6:30 p.m. I'm happy to note that our daily podcast is featured on Grace Alone Radio, which you can find at gracealoneradio.net. You can find the schedule on the website, and you can also download an app to your phone so that you can listen wherever you are. Grace Alone Radio is a 24-hour streaming service which carries the message of God's sovereign grace around the clock and around the world. Zion Primitive Baptist Church is located at 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. That's near the intersection of County Road 49 and Alabama Highway 159, about 8 miles north of Gordo, Alabama, and about 10 miles northeast of Reform, Alabama. If you're interested in finding more sermons, you can go to our website at zionpbc.com. That's zionpbc.com, where you'll find all of our posted sermons, as well as a link to subscribe to our podcast. You can also subscribe to our website, which will update you every time a new sermon is posted. As we continue in the book of Revelation, we come to a chapter that symbolically sets forth the ongoing battle between good and evil. In chapter 13, we see the perpetual uprisings of Satan throughout history, primarily through world powers against the Lord and His people. Indeed, this is the overall theme of the book of Revelation. And while it often appears that evil is going to win, we know that ultimately we will be eternally delivered from these enemies of God.
I want to continue tonight with the book of Revelation. And we've reached a point where I don't feel like it's necessary to review what we've looked at in the earlier chapters because it's not directly related. So I want to begin by reading the first four verses of Revelation chapter 13. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth is the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" Now, as I tried to study and meditate upon this, I came to the conclusion that this is a picture of the perpetual uprisings of Satan, primarily through world powers against the Lord and His people. And this has gone on and will continue to go on throughout history. And we've mentioned several times that this is the bigger theme of Revelation, is a constant, ongoing battle of good and evil. And while it often appears that evil is going to win, we know that ultimately Satan and all our wicked adversaries will be eternally judged and cast into the lake of fire, and we will be eternally delivered from them. Now, as we look at this account given here, and recognizing that this is a lot of symbolic language, we realize that we can give significance to various specifics that are mentioned, but at the same time, we need to get the general idea. So I'll just repeat again that this is a picture of the perpetual uprisings of Satan, primarily through world powers, against the Lord and his people throughout history. Now, the main part of this image or vision that John receives is the beast. So let's try to first establish the beast. We'll notice in one of the following verses that the beast receives his power from the dragon. So let's begin with the dragon, because we don't have to guess or speculate as to who the dragon represents. We can just go back to the previous chapter, Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9. And it says, "And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan." So I believe it's only reasonable to be consistent and to say, if in chapter 12 that the great dragon represented the devil and Satan, then certainly in chapter 13, that continues to be the idea. So this beast, whatever it is, receives his power, his support, his strength from the adversary. And when we think about the subject matter that I stated that this involves in Revelation chapter 13, we understand that all evil in this world has its roots with the great adversary, Satan, the devil, described here as the dragon. Now, that's what Paul had under consideration in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, when he said, "We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." So Paul makes it clear that though we may identify our enemy as evil empires, we may identify our enemy as some terrorist organization that claims to have religious foundations, yet those visible enemies, as Paul stated, and as we can glean from here, those visible enemies are under the influence of the great enemy, which is Satan, described here as the dragon. So once we come to understand what is under consideration or what is being represented by the beast, we can then have in mind what the real influence is behind the actions of the beast. Now, first of all, let's establish this to avoid confusion. Unlike the beast in Revelation chapter 4, and I'll turn to that in a moment, unlike those beasts, these are not good beasts. That is, this is not like those beasts around the throne of God. Let me just read a couple of verses in Revelation chapter 4, and you'll remember this, Revelation chapter 4, verses 9 through 11. "And when those beasts," speaking of those beasts around the throne of God, "when those beasts give glory and honor and thanks to him that sat on the throne, who liveth forever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before him that sat on the throne and worship him that liveth forever and ever, and cast their crowns before the Lord, or before the throne, saying, Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power. Thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. So obviously, these are not some evil being, because it says these beasts, plural, give glory and honor and thanks to him that sat on the throne. So understand that a beast is simply an animal. You know, today we often think of a beast as an evil creature or something scary, like on Beauty and the Beast. You know, a beast is something to be afraid of. But in the Bible, depending on the context, a beast may just be, as it is here in Revelation 4, a creature that worships and honors God. But that is not the kind of beast under consideration in Revelation 13. Now, by definition, these beasts are a dangerous kind of animal. And we'll see as we go through this that this beast, being literally a dangerous kind of animal, symbolically represents a brutal, ferocious man. That is a leader of an evil empire, a wicked man in authority who persecutes the Lord's people. And we know there are evil men. Think of Hitler, who was so cruel. Certainly you would think of Hitler as a brutal, ferocious man in terms of what he oversaw with regard to the Jews and others that he extinguished there under his reign. So this beast in Revelation 13, which gets his power from the dragon, Satan, the devil, represents an evil, ferocious man or ruler of some kind. Now, let's pull that all together. As we already said, the evil in this world, though physically identified as someone like Hitler, is actually under the influence of Satan himself. So now let's go back here to Revelation chapter 13 and try to understand what's under consideration here by this imagery. Now, this beast, in contrast to those beasts in Revelation 4, is likened unto the one described in Revelation 11:7, where it says, And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. So see, you have those beasts in heaven, but this beast ascends out of the bottomless pit. This is an evil beast. This beast represents an evil ruler under the influence of Satan. Now watch as we try to go through this verse by verse. We've already stated that the beast gets his power from Satan. So let's go through these verses and see if we can now, with that foundation, get some understanding from this imagery. John says, I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea. You see, evil in this world perpetually ascends or comes on the scene. And again, to stay with the example of Hitler, you know, he thought he would rule the world. He ascended. He slowly but surely came to power But then ultimately, his empire fell. And that goes on perpetually through history. So notice here, this beast is described as rising up out of the sea. So keep in mind as we go through this, this is not a one-time particular empire that will rule for some season of time, and it's being prophesied of here. No, this is an image of the ongoing course of history. This beast rises up out of the sea. Now listen to this. Having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. Now, numbers are always significant in the Bible. The number seven is the number of completion, and it's often used in a good, positive way in reference to God and in reference to things pertaining to the kingdom of God, but obviously that's not the context here. It says this beast had seven heads. So this beast is complete. Think of the evil empires. Think of Hitler's empire. You certainly saw that when it was assembled and strengthened, that was a complete, and as the number 10 represents, a unified force. So not only are there particular evil empires that are complete and unified in their motives and in their plans, but oftentimes they will cooperate with other evil rulers and empires. So that's the idea here. This beast rose up out of the sea with seven heads and ten horns. And notice this. This, to me, really makes it clear that this is referring to wicked rulers, because it said upon his horns, there were ten of them, representing unified evil forces, upon his horns were ten crowns, a symbol of one reigning over an empire. And upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. To blaspheme, that's a word which indicates speaking as irreverential and as cruel about God Himself as possible. By definition here, it's speaking not only of evil speaking against God, but it's reproachful speech, injurious to His divine majesty. You see, blasphemy is that which is spoken by someone that has no fear of God. In other words, they would use vile curse words in their description of God. That's blasphemy. Someone that has no fear of God and will say anything about God that they would say of a man that they had hatred for. That's blasphemy. Well, notice here, this beast with seven heads, ten horns, ten crowns upon his head. It says, upon these heads was the name of blasphemy. You see, when evil men rise up, when evil rulers represented by the beast here rise up under the influence of the dragon or Satan, they have no respect toward the Lord's people. As a matter of fact, they hate them. And as again, we'll stay with Hitler, as he wanted to extinguish the Jews, that's the nature of evil men, that is evil beast, under the influence of Satan. So you see that's all symbolic language. And I can't tell you, I'm not going to attempt to tell you what every little detail may represent. It's all significant. Certainly it all is there for a reason, but if I waited until I had light on everything in Revelation before I preached it, I would never preach on it. But I hope I've given you enough about that verse so you see this is the concept. This is the idea of Revelation 13. This is the idea of the first half of it. The first half of Revelation 13 concerns that beast that rises up out of the sea. Now, verse 2, "And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion." Now, this is part of it that I feel like I need some more insight on. But I believe these are just different ways of describing perhaps the vileness of the beast. For example, when he says he had the mouth of a lion, the lion is fierce and devouring. And isn't that the nature of beast? That is, evil rulers under the influence of Satan. They are vile, they are fierce, they are devouring. Now, notice the end of verse 2. We've already alluded to this. "And the dragon," Satan, "gave the beast his power and his seat and great authority." When evil men rise up under the influence of Satan, notice these three words that are descriptive of the position of prominence that he occupies. The dragon, Satan, gives him his power, his seat, that is, his position as ruler of the empire, and great authority. You know, evil rulers are dictators, aren't they? They're not subject to anyone. What they say goes. All they have to do is speak that something wicked be done or that the Lord's people be extinguished and it's carried out. And they receive that ultimately from the dragon. They receive from him their power, their seat, and notice it says not just authority, but great authority. Not only has that been the case under men like Hitler, but throughout the Bible that was the case. Think of the king of Babylon and all the ancient rulers who during their day were considered the most powerful man in the world at that time. That is the known world. You know, it wasn't a global community then. You know, for example, the Roman Empire was looked upon as the whole world. It wasn't global like it is today. So these rulers had great authority. Now I want you to notice this in verse 3. "And I saw one of his heads." Remember, he had 10 heads. "I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death." In other words, upon one of his heads there was an injury or a wound inflicted that was so severe that it resulted in death. "I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast." Now, later on in this chapter, we won't have to speculate that the world under consideration here, you can read this when you get home, read the rest of the chapter, and it'll be clear that the world under consideration here are the non-elect. Those, all the mass of humanity in the world that have no fear of God. That's who's under consideration here by the word world. But notice what it says. Here's the point. And when I first started studying this, I said, now what in the world does this mean? The beast has 10 heads. A deadly wound was inflicted upon one of those heads. And the wound was healed, and then all the world wondered after the beast. You remember the first prophecy about what Christ would do to the adversary, to Satan himself? Look at the book of Genesis, chapter 3. And keep the thought in mind that one of those 10 heads of the beast was severely wounded to the point of death, and yet it was healed. Genesis 3:15, this is the Lord speaking to the serpent, that is Satan, after Adam and Eve fell, and this is what the Lord said to the serpent. He said, I will put enmity between thee, that is Satan, and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. Now watch this, referring to the woman's seed, a prophecy of Christ. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Now, when Christ came into the world, and we can look at what the Bible says about this in a little while, but when Christ came to the world, that's when he dealt a death blow to Satan. That's when his head was wounded. So you say, well, why does it say here in Revelation that his wound was healed? Well, think of it this way. Have you ever killed a snake by stepping on its head with your heel and killing it? It begins to wiggle more violently than it ever has before. Isn't that interesting? When you kill a snake, it begins to wiggle as if it's more alive than it was when it was actually alive. Do you know that's what's going on with Satan now? The Lord has already destroyed him on the cross. Sentence has just not yet been executed. It will be executed when the Lord comes back. He knows he's destroyed. The heel of Christ wounded the head of Satan. He is destroyed, and he is wiggling. He is violently doing all he can because he knows his time is short. That's what's under consideration here in Revelation 13. When it talks about one of these 10 heads received a deadly wound and yet it was healed. Is it not true that these evil empires under the influence of Satan fall? And think of when we won World War II. You know, that was considered a good time in history, wasn't it? After World War II, you might could think, well, evil has been extinguished. Well, that deadly wound heals, doesn't it? There's always another evil force to rise up. Think of the empires today ruled by evil dictators that are waiting for us to have a president that makes the wrong decision so they can arise up as that evil beast. So you see, Revelation, let's make this point. As we said before, it's not to be looked at as a chronological prophecy that one day, whatever this beast represents is going to rise up, and this is a specific event that's going to happen in a specific time in history, and we're trying to figure out whether that has yet happened or not. That's not the approach. The approach is the idea that evil keeps rising up. And though it may appear that a death wound has been inflicted, yet it rises up again, but it's, I believe that imagery is meant to coincide with what was said when Jesus was described as wounding the head of the serpent. But he'll keep rising up all he can until his eternal sentence is carried out. So go back to Revelation chapter 13. I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. Verse 4. And they worshiped, watch this now, the world, the wicked in this world that have no fear of God, they worship the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worship the beast. Now, what's the idea there? The idea there is there's really no difference between the two in terms of how things transpire in this world. Here's what I mean by that. To worship and to be a part of the evil empire is to be a part of Satan in this world. You see, you may support, wicked men may be a comrade of those wicked men that rule the empire. They may be one of their close associates, like in Hitler's rule. He had many associates that were wicked like him, but ultimately they were under the influence of Satan. So you see how it just brings it together. It's just one evil force in reality. They worship the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, "Who is like unto the beast? And who is able to make war with him?" It appears that he can never be defeated. And I thought I would have time to get to this tonight, but I want you to take this one thing into consideration. Read Isaiah chapter 14. Which is a description of the fall of the king of Babylon. And interestingly, even though that's an obvious description of the fall of the king of Babylon, notice what it says in Isaiah chapter 14 and verse 12. Speaking of the king of Babylon, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations?" Notice in this context, which is obviously talking about the fall of the king of Babylon, that he coincides that with Lucifer, which is our adversary, the devil. He uses the metaphorical language in addressing the king of Babylon. He uses metaphorically, he refers to him as Lucifer. And this is in the midst of this long description of the fall of the king of Babylon. And he says, "O Lucifer, how art thou fallen from heaven?" So though the kingdom of Babylon fell, and that was as if Satan fell, that is, the beast and the dragon fell together, but they were not extinguished permanently, were they? If they were, we would be living in a great world today. But this activity continues to go on. Now, I would that I had time to get to all of this, but let me just make this point in closing. One day there will be the last uprising, and Satan will lose. And that's talked about in Revelation. Let me just read you two different places, a couple of verses. In Revelation chapter 17, verse 8. The beast, that thou sawest was and is not. You remember, I believe I preached on it here before, that when Jesus died on the cross, that inflicted a severe wound. So the beast was, that is, before Christ came, he had a position of influence and power that was diminished when Jesus died for the sins of his people and was raised again. It says the beast was and is not, but notice this, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. So while I've described this as an ongoing cycle, notice there is a final time that the cycle will end. The beast will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And let me in conclusion read these three verses or four verses in Revelation chapter 20. And if you look, if you study the context, this is referencing that the second coming of Christ, that is the end of time and the ultimate judgment on the beast. Revelation chapter 20 and beginning with verse 7, it says, "And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison, and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth." Remember, the whole world wanders after the beast. "Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea." See, he seems as if he can't be defeated. But not notice this. "And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints." That's descriptive of the Lord's people, His church in particular. "They encompassed the camp of the saints and the beloved city." And notice what happened. "And fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever." That's the last uprising, and his sentence as a result of Jesus bruising his head, his sentence will ultimately be executed and will never again be bothered by the beast, that is, the wicked of this world. Individuals are empires operating under the influence of the dragon.
Thank you for joining us today on the Zion Primitive Baptist Church podcast. I hope the message has been uplifting and beneficial to you, and that the Lord will continue to bless you to grow in grace and knowledge of the truth. Join us again tomorrow for another message of God's sovereign grace. If you would like to subscribe to our website, please go to www.zionpbc.com and sign up for email updates. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact the church at zionpbc1847@gmail.com. That's zionpbc1847@gmail.com. Or you can email me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter jchrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. May the Lord bless you, is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.